Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Thursday, December 23rd. But this will be is our special Christmas show. So you'll be hearing, we're going to have a Christmas show. I'm just laughing. I'm not Christian, but we're going to have a Christmas show anyway. Because why not? And so I thought, who would be the best guest to have a Christmas show with? And I go, oh, my God, this person would be the best person to have a Christmas show with. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce my special Christmas show guest. A special Christmas show guest, introduce yourself.
I'm Ramana Hussein. I'm an assistant metro editor at the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yes. And columnist for the Sun-Times, and regular guest on the Ben Jarofsky Show. And I think everyone out there will agree. First of all, Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Christmas Day.
Merry Christmas.
Ramana, yes, that's nice of you to say it as well. I think Ramana agree with me. That Ramana and Ben are the best two people to have a Christmas show because neither one of us are Christian, and we don't celebrate Christmas. Well, we kind of celebrate
it. I do with my in-laws now, but I didn't grow up celebrating it, but I did enjoy it. But we'll talk about a little bit about that.
So a Muslim and a Jew are going to do a Christmas show. God bless America. It's really what makes America great. And the thing about being a minority, a religious minority in America, is that you know what the majority is all about. You know their religions. You know their holidays. You know their songs. You know their prayers. You know it all. And then when like, now maybe Ramana will talk about how growing up in Lincolnwood is a little different. A lot of Jewish people out there. But my early years, Ramana, my Lincolnwood years were spent in Rhode Island.
Wow.
And I went to, I know, right?
I was going to say, at that time, there's probably no Jewish people.
Man, there were two Jewish people
in Rhode Island.
We were stuck in Rhode Island, this little corner of Rhode Island we lived in. And I remember, I don't know if you ever had a moment like this. This is relatively benevolent memory. But I believe it was second grade. And everything was Christmas this, Christmas that. We were making Christmas stockings and Christmas chains and all the little things, you know, that you do for Christmas and singing Christmas songs. And the teacher, she said, everybody call me Benny. So she goes, and children or whatever, boys and girls, Benny doesn't celebrate Christmas. And I was sitting at the back of the room in those days, Ramana. Every head turned around and looked at me like, what the beep? You don't celebrate Christmas. And somehow or other, I don't view that as like a really hostile, negative thing. You know what I mean? It's kind of an amusing story I've been telling for years, but it's one of my few memories from back in those days of being a minority, a religious minority, which is different than a racial or ethnic minority in a Christian world. So do you have any similar memories like that?
Well, it's really interesting that you talk about that because, you know, I was born in the 70s, and at that time, there were very few Indians, and very few people even knew what a Muslim was. So people really didn't know who I was. I remember one time on the bus, this girl separated all the Christians and Jews on the bus. She goes, all the Christians have to sit on this side, and all the Jewish people have to sit on this side. And she just assumed I was Christian, and I was like, well, I'm neither. But I grew up, it was just really weird. I don't know why people listen to
it. Hold it.
Yeah.
What?
This is a little, girls. I know it was a little grade school thing. This girl's like, oh, well, she goes, if you're Jewish, and just, she kind of like picked people. And I was so little, I didn't even know what was going on, but she assumed that I was somebody that would celebrate Christmas and not the Jewish holidays. But I grew up in a different situation. One day, it's really funny, one of my colleagues, Neil Steinberg, was walking by the newsroom and he was talking to someone else about how he grew up singing Christmas carols and no Jewish songs because where he went to school, there's no Jewish kids. And I said, that's funny because I went to a school that had a very, very large Jewish population. So we sang all the Jewish, the Hanukkah songs. You know, we sang the dreidel song. I can sing parts of the dreidel song. I made a menorah in woodshop class and my parents had it displayed in their house and they had no idea what it was. But I mean, that's the kind of school I went to. So I sang a lot. But when Christmas came around, I mean, I loved Christmas because, you know, I love the lights. But that's the thing. Yeah, we're all expected to like, oh, it's Christmas. Like, you know, we should all be excited. And my mom used to always give me gifts to give to my teachers around Christmas. Like even my parents knew. Like, and then in Lincolnwood, it's really interesting. There's like, the bigger homes are called the Lincolnwood Towers. And to this day, Lincolnwood's known for its Christmas lights. So all these people with really big homes would go all out and decorate their homes. And people still come to Lincolnwood to see lights. I still take my nephews and nieces to see the lights. I used to call Santa Claus also. Like, you know, there was this 800 number and it was like $3 like a minute. And I would listen to Santa Claus talk and watch all the cartoons about Christmas. And I thought it was fun and exciting. But you know, my family didn't celebrate Christmas. So I've always like enjoyed it. And I obviously now with my in-laws, I celebrate Christmas in a different way where, you know, we exchange presents and I didn't grow up doing that, but I always liked the spirit of Christmas. I even liked Hanukkah. We loved the Jewish holidays because we Muslims tend to like kosher products because, you know, in the 70s, there was a lot of things with pork gelatin in it. So whenever the Jewish holidays would come around, we're like, yes, we can eat all the kosher marshmallows that's out there. So we would know the Jewish, Ben, I grew up knowing when the Jewish holidays were coming out too. So I'm letting you know that it was Christian and Jewish people for us. Nobody knew what Muslims were. And I'm cool with celebrating everybody's holiday. One of the things I don't like is this force of like, you know, people get so upset when you don't say Merry Christmas. They think like people are taking away Christmas instead of Happy Holidays. But, you know, unless you know that person doesn't celebrate, you know, if you know they celebrate Christmas, fine. I have no problem saying Merry Christmas. But if I don't know what they celebrate, I do say Happy Holidays. I have no problem saying that. And I have no problem, like, you know, having fun on Christmas. But the thing that makes me annoyed is when people who are Christian, they don't want to observe or, like, address the fact that other people have holidays and don't really know them or don't really go out of their way to, like, understand other people's holidays. You know, it's like we're all expected to say Merry Christmas and like be like, oh, yeah, Christmas is so fun. But when it comes to other people's holidays, including I think it includes like, you know, a lot of Jewish families, too. Like everybody's just like, oh, we don't know when it is. And maybe it's because you and I, like the religious traditions that we grew up in, our holidays are not always on the same time every year. That might make things a little confusing. But still, I don't think people like, I don't know. I just don't like when people go out of their way. Like in 2007, I did a column. There was a school district where they had a large Middle Eastern Muslim population. And during Ramadan, the parents wanted to put up lights up for Ramadan. And a lot of the parents, a lot of them Christian, were going hysterical And they're like, we don't want these lights up during Ramadan. And then the school eventually got rid of all holidays altogether. And then they said, oh, it's because of these Muslims. Now we can't celebrate Christmas anymore. So it's interesting. It's interesting. And, you know, like, and people always talk about separation of church and state in schools. But sorry, we sing Christmas songs and Hanukkah songs all the time. But I bet if like someone all of a sudden wanted to like acknowledge like some Muslim holiday in a lot of schools, people would talk about separation of church and state. And I think they don't call it Christmas vacation anymore, right? Don't they call it winter break now?
Yeah, I think that's, but then like MAGA will complain about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, oh, there they go. They're the political correct crowd, you know?
Yeah, like a war on Christmas. But yeah, but I, like I said, I grew up observing the, observing or at least knowing about the Jewish traditions. And, you know, I knew what a dreidel was. And, you know, we sang, like I said, the dreidel song. And then there was that one song, oh Hanukkah, come light the menorah. I remember that one. I know the tunes to all these songs. So for me, it was like both.
You're far more knowledgeable about Jewish rituals, Jewish holidays, because you grew up in Lincolnwood around Jewish kids than I am about Muslim stuff.
No, but a lot of Muslim and Jewish traditions are very similar too. So when I've been to synagogues and when I talk to my Jewish friends, a lot of our traditions, like our prayers are a little different, but our traditions are very similar. Even some of the words.
I remember when I was coaching, you're going to laugh at me. Probably shouldn't confess this. So I really didn't, I'm trying to think, were there any Muslim kids at Evanston High School when I was, but it's so long ago, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. There were Hindu kids, but I don't think, I mean, if they were, I wasn't aware of it. Okay, yeah. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. Except for black kids who were like black Muslims, which is a whole different ballgame. So I remember coaching. You're going to laugh at this. So I had this girl. She ran track. I was at cross country. She's a really great kid. God bless you, Rita. I see you. And she's a Muslim kid. And so she called me, Coach, I can't run in this meet because it's Ramadan and I won't be eating. And my mom doesn't think it would be healthy for me to run. I'm like, what? What? I was the coach. I needed her. Okay. She's a good runner. Ramana was nothing against Muslims, but I needed this kid to run.
That is funny that you say that because I have a running story about Ramadan. When I was in high school, I was a fast runner and everybody wanted me on the track team. And I remember I came to gym class in the afternoon and I go, hey, I'm not going to run today because it's Ramadan. I'm not eating or drinking. And they're like, you know what? There was a girl in my morning class and she's Muslim too. And she ran. And then I knew it was my friend who had like class in the morning. And so I ended up running it like in under 8 minutes. And, you know, I didn't break my fast. I stayed. And, you know, one of the things I have to tell you, me and my family, I still run during Ramadan. I can work out during Ramadan. I've trained myself to do that. I always do that anyway. So me and my siblings always played sports and ran, but some people can't. So I saw that friend in the hallway later that day. And I'm like, Sophia, which is her name. And I was like, do you run the mile? Because of you, I had to run the mile. And she's like, yeah. And I got so hungry afterwards and thirsty, I broke my fast. And I'm like, what? I was like, I still rag her about it. She's still my friend today. So we always laugh about it because she broke her fast after running. And it was because of her. My gym teacher's like, oh, I had another student who was Muslim and she ran. So you can do it too. But,
oh my God, that teacher's like that. I was worse. I was like, well, have you ever heard of Hakeem Olajuwon, the great center for?
Yeah.
He doesn't eat. He face fast.
Yeah. A lot of athletes do play, but you know, not everybody's body is the same. Me and my siblings, like my brother played sports and I still, to this day, I can still, like, I wake up, you don't break fast till like, sunset. So I run in the morning. I've been running during the pandemic in the morning during Ramadan. So it's like how you train yourself.
I did not know that you were a runner. And I know a lot about running. I love track and field. If you ran a sub, how old were you when you were running sub 8 minute miles?
I mean, under. I mean, I was like 16, 17.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's... I wasn't like a 5 minute mile runner, but I was always a fast runner. And when I was in junior high, I'm not fast anymore. Trust me. You should ask Mick. I mean, he runs fast still. And I told him, I'm like old. I'm like, I run slower. I just like running. I run 3 days a week. And my siblings all make fun of me of how slow I am. But when I was younger, like a lot of my, when my younger sister went to junior high, all the teachers are like, oh, you remember your sister? She was a fast runner. So I was fast. I'm not just saying I was. That's the key element.
All right. Anyway, Ramona and I wish absolutely every one of you out there a Merry Christmas. I hope you're having a great Christmas, opening your presents, et cetera, and so forth. And it's a COVID Christmas. Let's just transition a bit to COVID. Nate, who produces the weekend shows, God bless him, is playing in pain. He's got COVID. And tomorrow's guest, which probably air before this, but whatever, it's a confusing world. Maybe not. I don't know. I haven't done the interview yet. Eric Zorn, he'll be coming on the show. He has COVID. I am here in Los Angeles visiting my daughters and my son-in-law, my granddaughter, and I'm afraid that I'm going to catch COVID. I'm in my little room here looking at the rain. It's pouring rain out here in Southern California. So, Ramona, one thing that has remained consistent for the last 2 years is that we really can't go 2 weeks without having a COVID conversation because, I mean, as obvious as what I'm about to say is, it's like this thing is so for real. It's not going anywhere. We haven't done really much of anything to make it go away. We are just such a weird species. The human species is just a weird, oddball collection of people that we seem incapable, for many different reasons, of conquering COVID. That's how I see it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a very, you know, this virus is obviously something we don't know that much about. So, you know, obviously scientists are starting to study this, and vaccination and wearing a mask seem to be the best bet. Like, of course, none of us are 100%. You know, when we had the lockdown, was I perfect? No, but I did try. And there are some people who just refuse to believe that there is a virus out there or that the vaccine is effective. I understand the concerns of people, you know, who are saying that we don't know that much about vaccines. But at the same time, all the doctors that I talk to, they say that the benefits outweigh the risks. And so, and then, you know, you hear a lot of anti-vaxxers saying, my body, my choice, but it isn't just your body. That's the thing that, you know, makes me afraid. I mean, I'm a pretty social person. I you know, this new, this new strain, I mean, which I am hearing is so far milder if you're vaccinated, but you never know. And I'm, you know, I'm not living still like I did pre-pandemic, like the way I want to live my life. I love traveling. I love going overseas. And I'm getting jealous of watching people's pictures like overseas. I mean, I do hope to go somewhere soon. But I've curbed a lot of my activities. And there are just some people who are willing not to curb their activities and not to get vaccinated. I don't know. I know you're not on Twitter. But yesterday I saw Freddie Mercury was trending on Twitter. And I'm like, I wonder why Freddie Mercury is trending on Twitter. Well, it turns out this bar in Florida had like, you know, people, all these people, maskless people had this sign and they had this, you know, Queen song. And it said, wearing that mask on your face, you big disgrace, you know, quoting this famous Queen song. And everybody's like, you know that Freddie Mercury, what he died of, right? He would have been immunocompromised. And everybody was kind of mad because the right is using Queen and Freddie Mercury's name to like put out their anti-vax message. It was like this board in front of a bar. Like they're just making fun of people who are wearing masks. So it's like, I just find it unbelievable that, you know, we're the United States. We're always supposed to be this model. I mean, obviously the last couple of years have showed us that we're not the model that we think we are. But, you know, we're supposed to be this world leader. And we have so many people in this country who just don't want to get vaccinated. And we, like I've talked about on the show before, is like, we're so selfish. It's about what's in it for me. So you have to bribe Americans to get vaccines. And there's people literally dying in countries. And you know, our vaccines are free. You can get it wherever you want. And people still don't want to get vaccinated.
Well, today, earlier today, what I say today is this Thursday. So everybody can hear this interview that I'm about to allude to. A good friend of the show, political strategist Del Marie Cobb came on. We had an extended conversation about, follow me on this one now, anti-vaxxers, black anti-vaxxers and white anti-vaxxers and the different reasons cited by each group, like what motivates each group. And I urge everybody to check out what Delmarie had to say about it. It was really fascinating stuff. And so I'm going to ask you this. Anti-vaxxers in the Indian American community or the Muslim community, the subset of that, what seems to be motivating them?
So I actually, unfortunately, I had a family friend. We had two family friends who passed away from COVID. One was a senior citizen and he got sick right before the vaccines came out. So he didn't even get a chance to get vaccinated. It was a very, really sad story. His whole family got COVID and it was fatal for him. And I just had another family friend who I knew since childhood who was in his 40s, late 40s, and he died of COVID. And this is just recently. I mean, he's somebody I grew up with and he didn't get vaccinated. And I don't know what the reasons were, but he wasn't mentally all there. So I don't know what his reasonings were. And he lives in Florida. So a lot of people were saying that there's so many people who are doubting out there. I don't know what his reasoning was, but it's really sad that this probably could have been preventable for him. And there are some people, I think, like within the Muslim community, not many people I know. I remember, Ben, I was telling you that they did this study like before the vaccine came out and they said the Asian American group, they said Asian Americans were the most willing to take the vaccine. So I've always said that most of my family friends who I know who are Indian or South Asian, we've all are vaccinated and have gotten boosted. We're like dying to get vaccinated. It's, every group has their anti-vaxxers. The things that I've seen is like a lot of parents were skeptical about giving it to their children, which I understand because, you know, they're still developing, but hesitantly a lot of, you know, at the end of the day, those parents ended up giving the vaccine. I've also anecdotally heard of people who are like, you know, as you've heard, like people who consider themselves really religious, like they don't want to get the vaccine, which doesn't make sense because they probably have every other vaccine. But, you know, people are using different excuses. I mean, I know what the Trump, I want to listen to the interview that you did with Delmarie Cobb because that should be really interesting. But yeah, I think I told you before, I feel like the biggest holdouts are the white MAGA people and the African American community for their own reasons. Like if you want it to generalize, and I could be wrong. I mean, I think there's anti-vaxxers in each group. And those are so those are the reasons I've seen so far. Like, oh, we don't know that much about it. And, you know, my brother a couple days ago, like we were like, he hadn't gotten boosted yet. So we're like, you need to get boosted. And then, you know, my mom said he's too lazy. My younger sister's like, oh, he's so lazy. He's not, you know, doing it. But he told us yesterday he got boosted.
Well, see that. Okay. Now, you're getting at something. Putting aside like having a philosophical or an ideological or religious based reason for not getting vaccinated, I do believe there's a certain amount of laziness and lethargy.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't get the religious reasons because like a lot of Muslim, you know, clerics and imams are saying that in Islam, you're supposed to look out for your neighbors and you're supposed to like when you're supposed to believe in science and do this because you want to save humanity. So like, I don't get the religion, you know, in each group, I think in a lot of groups, like there are some people in different religious groups just don't want to get in. I don't get the religious reasons at all. I mean, I guess Jehovah's Witness, right? They don't take vaccines or medicine.
Or Christian Scientists.
Yeah.
If you have a particular religion that you're dedicated to, that this is your fundamental bedrock belief, and that religion states that you don't take medicine of any kind, then I can understand why you would have a fundamental opposition to getting vaccinated. I'm not saying that's a good thing to have. I'm just saying I can understand it. But half of these religious reasons that I hear, man, the most cooked up, made up excuses, and they're violated in other instances.
I don't get the laziness either. Like, how could you be so lazy? Like, These places are, you know, in the beginning when the vaccines were rolling out, you know, it was really hard to get an appointment. At this point, it's like, I mean, I just got a test. Like I walked to the place to get myself tested. If I wanted to go get the vaccine right now, I'm vaccinated and boosted, so I don't need one right now. But if I needed a vaccine, I can walk to a Walgreens. I know there's places that have food deserts and maybe pharmacy deserts, so I understand that. But you wouldn't, you know, you would, if you could, if this is something that can cause you death or other people death, like how hard is it to take like an hour of your day to go get vaccinated? Even less than an hour for a lot of people.
I'm with you, but people are lazy and lethargic. And I've heard every excuse. I had a friend who, and I'm not naming names, I'm not throwing my friends under buses, but this guy goes, I don't trust Walgreens. I'm like, why? You know, I don't know. She's like, that was a why.
So then go to CVS. Go to CVS. Walmart, I think, is offering it too. You know, go to the doctor's office. It's just.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
If you're going to be a conspiracy theorist, you can't live your life like that. I mean, people who are conspiracy theorists, they pick and choose what they want to be conspiracy theorist about. And the thing is, a lot of these people who I've heard a lot of like anecdotal stories about a lot of people who are unvaccinated, they end up in the hospital and when they're deathly ill, they all of a sudden want the vaccine. So it's sad. It's a sad situation, you know?
By the way, you mentioned conspiracy theorists, and I was listening to this Louis C.K. Bit. I don't know.
Oh, God.
I'm back on Louis C.K. But his latest comedy bit, I don't know if you saw this, it's trending on Twitter, I don't know, but it was sent to me by someone. And so he's talking about conspiracy theorists. This is actually a funny bit. When he did it, I was like, God, I wish I had thought of that. So he's talking about the 9/11 conspiracy theorists, 9/11 deniers. And he was talking about, he said he had a conversation with his daughter and she goes, Daddy, what's that? And he said, well, that 9/11 deniers, people who don't think that the attacks on 9/11 were real. And she goes, oh, I thought they were saying that there were 9/11 deniers. And I thought that was funny, man. Like nine, as in nine people denying the number 11 exists. Anyway.
Oh, that's pretty funny. But, now once you come back, Ben, to Chicago and Cook County, you're going to have to prove that you're vaccinated to go into restaurants and gyms.
And here. And we talked about this on the show the other day. I get your thoughts on this. I got friends who won't get vaccinated. People I know of won't get vaccinated, but they still want to have all the liberties of people who are already vaccinated. So they have fake IDs and they're bragging to me about how they go to the Bulls. Because the Bulls games, to get to a Bulls game, my beloved Chicago Bulls, who are 19-10 as we speak, love the Bulls this year to help me get through this pandemic. But to get into the United Center, you had to have proof that you were vaccinated or you had a negative test. So I got this card. And so the joke I was making, it was like, I don't know if you saw that the movie where McLovin, where the guy has the fake ID.
Yeah, super bad.
Super bad, yeah. So you know, I got the McLovin cards. But it's just so pathetic the anti-vaxxers are. They don't want to get a vax, but they don't want to take a real stand. See, they want to be able to have their cake and eat it too. So, yeah, I applaud it. What's your thoughts? I got no problem. Well, the Hideout, my beloved Hideout, already had a rule that you had to be a vaccinated card. You had to have
Did you hear about the Hideout? I think people from out of town are giving it bad reviews. People who are probably anti-vaxxers and people who don't like vaccine mandates and wearing masks. So they're going on Yelp and giving it bad reviews.
Yes,
so,
and let me just say this about that. Yeah, it's true. And let me just say this about that and get your response. Yelp sucks, ladies and gentlemen. Yelp is like extortion. Yelp figured out this thing where you could have a business totally vulnerable to whoever. You know, it's like Richard Roper writes a review of a movie. He puts his name on the review. He puts his picture on the review. Ramona and I could talk about it. We could throw him under a bus if we disagree with him. We could say, we love you, Richard Roper. But he has the guts to put his name and his picture on his review. You Yelpers, I don't like this waiter. I'll get back at him with you. So Yelp is just freaking extortion. So here's what I say to everybody out in the universe. Yes, it's a dirty, rotten trick that these anti-vaxxers are doing to my beloved Hideout. But I say this to America. Stop reading Yelp. Stop it. You guys are like bamboozled and gaslit by stupid things on the internet like Yelp. That's my thoughts. Your response, Romana.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes Yelp has good things. I know when there's people who are Trump supporters, we've had the restaurant in Uptown. Remember that restaurant in Uptown where all the hipsters like to eat? It turned out that their owners are at the Capitol riot, and everybody went on Yelp and started saying bad stuff about it. God, I'm forgetting the name of the place.
It was a Vietnamese restaurant.
Yeah,
and you know what? If the food's good, the food's good. It's got nothing to do with the political affiliations of the owner. If you don't want to go to a restaurant because you don't want to support a MAGA head, fine. Don't go to that restaurant. But it's like Yelp, the only way to do it. You know what I'm saying? That's,
yeah,
it's
no,
like,
no. I think it's unfair in a lot of cases. So I always take those Yelp reviews with a grain of salt. I always look at to see what the full review are. And I do this also when I go overseas, because some people are very, very picky too. It's hard to please them. So I look at what kind of things they're saying too. Because some people, like, they get so mad if they have to wait like 10 more minutes. And I'm like, God, the fact that you like wasted all this time to complain on Yelp about it. It's like, I can tell the personalities of people. When I read a lot of Yelp reviews, I'm like, this guy is probably really uptight and anal and needs everything like perfect. Like, you know, if the waiter doesn't come and say hi, it's like a big deal or something, or doesn't say a certain phrase. So some people are just like super uptight, and I can tell who they are. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's totally wrong to do that. But, you know, this is the country we live in. It's like, if you want to do something the right thing, people will come after you, right? You know, because this other side, or, you know, the people who are like the MAGA people, think anything that has to do with science, you know, they're all about their civil liberties, but they're not about civil liberties of other people that don't look like them. So it's just insane. But I'm okay with the vaccine mandate, you know, and going into restaurants and gyms, showing that you're vaccinated. Yeah, you know, the scary thing is there are a lot of people who probably have fake vaccine cards. So I hope there is a clampdown on the fake vaccine cards. You know, I just hope people follow the rules. I hope people don't get lax about looking at people's cards.
Absolutely. By the way, just sort of thought, you put this in my head. More inconsistency, hypocrisy from MAGA. MAGA sobs. We talk about this all the time. Cry, weeping about cancel culture. Well, what is MAGA doing to the hideout? You know, they disagree with the hideout. Oh, well, I know what we'll do. We'll cancel your culture. We'll institute this stupid Yelp plan to undercut you, put you out of business. That'll punish you for having an opinion different than us. MAGA is the biggest cancel culture in the country. They far exceed the left with their political correctness. You know what I'm saying? When you went on that riff, Roman, I'm like, yeah, that's cancel culture. Where's Donald Trump to denounce that? You know what I'm saying? What's Marjorie Taylor Greene? Hey, aren't you going to denounce cancel culture at the hideout? You get what I'm saying?
Nope. Only when it's their culture.
Right. Only when it's their culture. Can't cancel my culture. You should be free to be an idiot.
Exactly.
I got no problem with the mandate. Do you think anybody's going to get the shot because of this? Do you follow what I'm saying? Do you think this will...
I don't know. I hope so. I mean, you know, anecdotally, you always hear about somebody like finally caving in to it. So if it makes people like, if they want to go out and, you know, obviously they can socialize at home, but if they want to go out to a restaurant and see their friends, or, you know, a lot of, you know, if they want to go hang out at a bar or go to a gym, I think it will motivate some people. And even if it motivates a few people, I still think that's a good thing.
All right, let's move on to, I thought I was through with this guy, but apparently I'm not, Kyle Rittenhouse. We've talked a lot about the Kyle Rittenhouse case. I personally was very offended by the decision to acquit him. I agree wholeheartedly with Darlene Glenn, and I urge everybody to read her column that she wrote for the Sun-Times that pointed out that it was just essentially an affirmation of the right of a white man to kill some white people who support Black Lives Matter. And so I didn't think it was a good day for America, to put it mildly. But I was sort of hoping that Kyle Rittenhouse would get this break, if you will, and then just quietly just sort of disappear and try to get his life together or whatever. But no, he's now embracing his celebrity status. And he just had an appearance in front of some right-wing group. I think it was in Arizona, a hall packed with maskless people, you know, just celebrating their right to give each other COVID. Your thoughts about Kyle Rittenhouse?
Yeah, you know, you would hope that he would try to redeem himself and show some remorse. But I know he's a kid, but I think at a certain point, you know, going to these conferences and taking a picture with Boebert, if that's how you say her name, Lauren Boebert, it's just showing, you know, he was like saying how like he was all about Black Lives Matter. And then I'm like, you're posing with this woman who's definitely a bigot. And it's like, isn't there any sort of remorse? I mean, there's one thing if you get off, like, you know, he was crying on the sedan and it's like, you're basically eating up, you know, all these adults who think a certain way are taking an advantage of you. You know, he could say no, but he clearly embraces this. And I don't know if you saw a news story a couple of days ago about a truck driver who had crashed into some people. I think there was some sort of mechanical error with his truck. From what I was told, I haven't read the whole story, but a lot of people have been talking about Kyle Rittenhouse because this man ended up, hitting some people. He killed four people and he got a 110-year sentence. And this guy was very, very sad about what had happened. He said he would have traded places with all these victims. He cried. He got a 110-year sentence. And people are like, you know, Kyle Rittenhouse, meanwhile, gets away with it. And he's treated like a celebrity. And meanwhile, this guy is, you know, nobody's saying that he should be held accountable, but he's basically, you know, he's a Latino guy. And people are like, you know, meanwhile, a white guy can do this and a Hispanic guy who is remorseful gets a 110-year sentence. So a lot of people are speaking out about that case as well.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that story. I missed that one. And but yeah, there's. To contrast that gentleman you're talking about, a lack of remorse, because remorse, your point is well taken. Remorse goes beyond that moment when you're on the witness stand and you're hoping to win over the jury with your tears, quote unquote. I have tears in quotes, air quotes. Remorse would continue after the fact, even after you beat the rap.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's two people dead and you injured one person. And, you know, even if you get off, you're acquitted, there's got to be some, you know, it's like, it's only been a few months or a few weeks and you're out and about parading with all these individuals. I mean, he's going to become a celebrity for the right. I mean, he already was, you know, this documentary made of him like 2 seconds, like after with Tucker Carlson that, you know, gets put out. So it's actually a sad state and just speaks to more about what's wrong with our country.
Yeah. And it's greater than Kyle Rittenhouse. I think that's a good point. It's more about the people who are cheering him.
Yeah. The adults. I mean, yeah. The part of me is like, okay, he's 18. I'm not saying, you know, that he's excused for shooting anybody because I understand the outrage out there for him getting off, but it's like, he's 18. You know, when you're 18, I think back about myself when I was 18, I probably wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, but I don't know. I would think that I would have had some remorse and had some sort of, you know, I won't want to be paraded like the celebrities. And, you know, it's the adults at the end of the day who are more at fault. But I think at this point, he's 18. You know, they say that you're an adult by then. He can say no. His mom can tell him, no, you're not doing this. But this is who he's surrounding himself with.
All right, let's close with a go back to some Christmas cheer on a more positive note. Romana finally finished the Beatle documentary. So both of us are Beatles fans. It's remarkable. She's a Beatles. Romana was born after the Beatles broke up and she's still a Beatles fan. So I got a little shout out to Romana for, having an open mind to music from a generation before her. So what's your grade? What's your thoughts? I guess I don't even bother giving it a grade.
Well, you know, I thought it was an A. I thought it was really great. Yeah, there were parts of it, you know, my husband, Mick, your friend, gave up on it. He said it was too much. He said it was too long. And But I thought the payoff was really good. And I personally, like I said, that I might not be able to watch that with any other band, but with the Beatles, it's like, you know, their music, it's like timeless, I think. You know, I'm biased. I know not all of your listeners like the Beatles, but I'll watch anything with the Beatles in it. And yeah, I admit there were some parts that were a little slow, but I like kind of like the little things about the Beatles that I, you know, did, you know, kind of like watching them interact and like minor things like Ringo giving Yoko Ono gum. I know Yoko Ono's not in the band, but, you know, just watching her kind of sit around and Paul McCartney playing with Heather McCartney. I thought that was really cute. And I think it made you look at the way they interacted with each other. I mean, we've heard of stories about them like really not liking each other. And there probably was tension out there, but just watching them kind of talk to each other, they really had respect with one another. And I think Paul and John definitely had that bond that the other two weren't a part of. So just watching like Paul and John talk, and I think Paul comes off as like, obviously he seems like a workhorse, but he also seems pretty nice. I don't know. He came off as nice to me. Ringo was just like glad to be there for the ride. You feel bad for George at some parts where he feels like he's been neglected and eventually leaves the band. And then, you know, like you talked about in your column, watching Billy Preston come in, who at the time was only 22 years old. He just comes in and he's like playing. He's like, he just is able to, was that an organ or a piano? Whatever it was. Like, he was just so good at it. Like, he could just like, they were singing a song. And like you said, everything kind of, it was just kind of like, it was dark and dismal. And like, it seemed like the lights, like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, where it's like black and white. And all of a sudden, you know, Dorothy goes to Oz and it's all colorful. And it really gave him kind of motivation to work. And it was cool. I thought it was cool to watch. And then watching, you know, the concert at the end, I had no idea. You know, I have all the Beatles albums, the original Beatles albums that were printed in England. Got them when I was 17 years old, made my dad get them for me. I never knew that the rooftop concert, basically they use songs that they performed on there on the album. I had no idea it was from the actual concert. And so I thought it was fun. I liked it a lot. I know it's not for everybody, but it was just fun. I at the end was really fun. And, you know, as it got closer to the date, it got exciting. And then, you know, I really liked the fashion. That's another thing that I was going to tell you. I mean, the fashion was like awesome. Like, I love that one, the engineer's jackets. Like, he had the coolest jackets, you know, out there. I thought he had the best clothes. So I thought it was really cool. And these people are like 80 now. So it's like you watching them, like, and, you know, the film was so crisp. I didn't know Alan Parsons did stuff with them. I'm like, wait, is that Alan Parsons from the Alan Parsons Project? And, you know, it was cool to see that. I liked the 60s fashion. I thought that was fun to watch. So I don't know. And I also noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, but, you know, today we always hear about rock stars and they're demanding, you know, they always have these like, you know, contracts about what they can eat and what they can't eat. And it's kind of funny to watch at that time, the Beatles, all they were eating was like toast. Yeah. Marmalade on toast. And it looked so like sad. I was like, oh, that's all they're eating. And, you know, they seemed to be happy. They were just like having fun playing the music. And I loved watching the toast. The toast made me laugh. I'm like, God, they're rock stars and all they're eating is toast. And that part where they had them, they bugged the flower vase or whatever it was during lunch with John and Paul. I thought that was really cool. And then I didn't think about it until I read it later, but you heard Paul saying like, you know, maybe when we're older, we'll sit around and sing and we won't have any like sort of fights or anything like that. And it was kind of sad because you think about it, John Lennon obviously didn't live to be that old. So some parts of it are kind of sad because you know what happens, right? But in general, I thought it was kind of fun. I think if you're a Beatles fan, 9 out of 10 chances are that you're going to like it. And I liked it. You know, it was 8 hours, but it was 8 hours that I enjoyed.
I'm with you 100%. I would not recommend it to anybody. I said it from the get-go. If you're not a Beatles fan, don't watch this. This is for Beatles fans and Beatles fans only. I will say this. That I thought it was a very revealing look at the creative process.
Yes.
And I'm not equating myself to one of the Beatles, okay? We had a show just a couple days ago. Charles Ellison was on. I urge everybody to check it out. This guy is brilliant. He's a jazz trumpet player, and he's a jazz historian. And he was talking about John Coltrane and John Coltrane's search for what is unobtainable excellence, perfection. And you can't obtain it, but it's the search that's what's important. And the sounds that John Coltrane will create, the music will create while he's searching for something that he will fail at getting at. Okay. It was kind of interesting point that Charles Ellison was making about the creative process of John Coltrane. The Beatles are, in my humble opinion, a step way, way down from John Coltrane, but they're very melodic. They're very creative. Particularly John Lennon is very skillful with his lyrics. And so Romano, to watch that process where they start out with just this vague concept of a tune, and they work the tune out, and they try to weave words together that will rhyme and fit the tune and have some coherence, and to see them stumble and start and have like hit dead ends, and they get frustrated. They just sit there and look in space. I just like, oh my goodness, I know what this is like. This is like exactly. Writing a story.
I mean, these are the Beatles, and they're having they're getting stuck. So I think it should inspire people to say that, hey, everybody gets stuck, and even the Beatles couldn't come up with something else. And just being Indian, I thought it was cool. Obviously the Indian footage always makes me laugh, but I did, the whole Get Back song was basically a song that started off as an it was against people who were anti-immigration. And it was originally, instead of the names were Indians and Pakistanis, that was what the lyrics were, because, there's a lot of South Asians in England. So, they had the different names. It was Indian, Pakistanis, Puerto Rican. So I thought that was cool as someone who's South Asian. And I don't know. In general, they're just like the little parts of the documentary were the best things for me. And I just like the songs coming together at the end, and them listening to it at the end after they do the rooftop concert, and watching the cops come and go, hey, the polite British cops say, hey, can you turn it down? And, it was funny how they ended up, listening to the cops, and they sit in the studio and they listen to it at the end. And it was fun. I thought it was fun.
And I got to say this, now you've seen the whole show. So when Romana came out a few weeks ago, she'd just been starting seeing it. She saw George's
Hare Krishna friends
that he allowed to sit in when they were in the bigger studio. But when they got to the smaller studio, you noticed they weren't there.
No.
They got the heave ho. And
did you see the part where, I'm sure you remember, you saw the whole thing, but so when George left the band temporarily, they sent him flowers. Remember, Ringo goes, oh, look, we got flowers. And he goes, who is it from? And they opened it. It was for George. And it was a Hare Krishna's. So that made me laugh,
No. By the way, they the exchange. Okay, so the trip to India where the Beatles went with the Maharishi. George basically, it was his initiative. He organized it. They went with him. A year later after the trip, John and Paul were pretty much cynical about it, rolling their eyes and making fun of themselves. And I give George credit for standing his ground when they had that exchange and defending it. I can't hate on someone.
I actually think George Harrison was really respectful of Indian culture. The thing is, a lot of Indians kind of find people who go to India to find themselves, the white people who go to find themselves, they're kind of annoying because they're not really trying to find out who Indian people actually are or learn about the culture. They just want to go live in this ashram and live this kind of life. I mean, that's a stereotype of a white person going to India, I got to find myself. So I do laugh at that. But I think George Harrison did try to understand the culture. I mean, he learned how to play the sitar, and I think he was never disrespectful to, the culture. But it was funny because I remember reading that Ringo never liked India. And so when somebody asked him if he liked India, I don't know if you remember, he said no. And he left India because he didn't like the food and stuff. And hey, I kind of respect that. I mean, I'll be like, hey, how could you not like India? But, I've been to India, and I get frustrated when I'm there because I have my relatives there. And you know, we'd get into these little, you know, little fights and stuff like that. But India's close to my heart. But yeah, I thought George Harrison took the Maharishi seriously at some point. The other Beatles kind of caught on to him. But no, I think George is pretty sincere. So I'm sure he was very nice to the Hare Krishnas. I bought a, you know, like, I don't see Hare Krishnas at airports anymore, but in the 90s, the last time I saw some was in California in the 90s, 95, and they were selling cookbooks, and I bought a cookbook from them. It was like free. They gave it to me, and they're like, you can give a donation. I think I just gave them $1. They're like white, you know, Hare Krishnas. So I laughed, of course, and I'm like, yeah, I'll buy your cookbook. But I have to tell you, to this day, I still use some of the recipes from from this Hare Krishna cookbook. You know, it's basically, you know, it's kind of like, and then there's pictures of like white people wearing Indian clothes and eating Indian food. It's really funny. I still have it. Like, the book's like falling apart. It's this paperback. But hey, I've actually seen Indian Hare Krishnas in India too, when I was a little girl. So it's definitely interesting.
That cookbook has served its purpose.
Yes.
All right. We've run out of time, so we're not going to do anything on Succession, which is a show that Ramona has just started watching. And of course, I'm way behind it. The show came out like 4 years ago, I think, and I'm now just watching it, but I'm utterly obsessed with it. And so Ramona's homework assignment is to catch up to where I am and basically finish at least 2 years. Although I got a feeling you're going to plow right through to the third year. And then probably the next time you're on, we could take a little deeper dive.
Yes.
I think you're going to really enjoy talking Succession, what it says about America in this stage of our existence. So that's something, that's your homework assignment over the Christmas holidays. You ready for it?
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Ramona, have a great Christmas.
Thank you.
And I hope the presents that your in-laws give you are things that you need and love and want. And even if they're not, I think you'll just be really nice and say, oh, thank you, whether they are.
It'll be fun.
All right. Very good. That's the great Ramona Hussein. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.